Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and Mike Patriot. If you're at a Willie's here on KPFT 90.1 FM. I don't know if you can hear me over the music. Okay, we're good. My headphones sometimes play tricks on me. So here we are, Monday night, 9 p.m., and I can guarantee that unless you bring it up, one thing I'm not going to talk about is Bill Cosby. We have an awful lot of Bill Cosby on the media. Everyone else is doing it. I don't have to. Okay, first of all, this is the last time I have tickets to the Space City Comic-Con. I now have two pairs. These tickets are good for Friday, this coming Friday, the 24th, from noon to 8 p.m. They are upgradable to the weekend, so you can put the value of the tickets toward an upgrade. And it's going to be interesting. If you have never been to a science fiction convention, this could be an interesting experience for you. It's not typical of all science fiction conventions, but it is typical of a certain variety, which is essentially a for-profit. There will be a lot of major and minor personalities who have been involved in one way or another with science fiction. I've been going through the site, and you can go to tonight's show announcement, and there is a link for the schedule. Apparently, William Shatner is going to be there for photo ops, as well as Tim Russ from Star Trek Voyager, and a number of other actors who you may or may not know. But it should be fun. Should be interesting, especially if you've never been. There will be gaming as well. Should be fun. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you call for the tickets, you don't have to go on the air, but of course I would love to talk to you. If you call for the tickets, please be certain, as reasonably certain as you can be, that you're going to use them. It's just a shame to waste stuff like this. 713-526-5738. Two pairs of tickets for Friday's Space City Comic-Con. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, open forum. So if you want to bring up a topic that I have not mentioned, that's fine, but I'll throw out some things. Alternative media. Alternative media, in my humble opinion, while it has value, I think the value is sometimes lost in the writing styles. I was actually, Egberto and I chat prior to each show because, you know, we're here. And I want to make a distinction between journalism and writing in a journalistic style. You can complain about what and how the New York Times reports, or ABC News or NBC News or any of the so-called mainstream media, the big corporate media, you can complain about how and what they report, but there is a specific journalistic style that avoids obvious insults or obvious ad hominem attacks. That kind of writing is what you would call polemical, a polemic. And a polemic, and again, I have a definition for this because I wanted to make sure I got it right. A polemic is defined by Merriam-Webster.com as a strong written or spoken attack against someone else's opinions, beliefs, practices, etc. Or polemics, the art or practice of using language to defend or harshly criticize something or someone. And then Wikipedia describes it as a polemic can be also a person who often writes polemics or speaks polemically or is a polemicist or a polemic. And I think a lot of alternative media, blog media, I think that very often the writers have worthwhile information and worthwhile points of view, but I think sometimes that gets lost in a writing style that is less journalistic than perhaps a little bit amateurish. And I don't say that as an insult. I mean, an amateur, the word comes from the Latin, which means to love. You do something for love instead of money. In that sense, I'm an amateur. For the purposes of this show, Egberto is an amateur. And it's not an insult. It simply means you do something for love rather than money. Professional is doing it for money. So what made me think about that, I ran across a particular article. It was in the Google news section, the aggregator. And I thought it was interesting. It's called The Obama Doctrine, A New Paradigm Worthy of a Second Nobel Peace Prize. And in the article, which I have a link to on today's show announcement, in the article, the Obama Doctrine is defined by this writer, Spandan Chakrabarty, as the principle that the United States should never fear to negotiate and that we are a power strong enough to take calculated risks. The article is somewhat longer than that. The thinking is somewhat more detailed than that. I think that the article itself has merit. I think that the merit for some readers can be lost in a writing style which in some ways seems a little amateurish and in some ways seems a little polemical. On the other hand, I increasingly completely agree with Egberto and folks with his point of view that the mainstream media is basically failing this country. With very few exceptions, I think that generally speaking, the network news, it goes without saying, Fox News. I mean, it really does go without saying, even though I'm saying it. They really fail this country in terms of their willingness to report in depth, their willingness to speak to power, their increasing loss of objectivity. It's obvious that there is a point of view. And I think the first time I became really, really aware of this was during the Occupy movement, when, for the most part, the only person in the mainstream media talking about it was Keith Olbermann. He passed the demonstrations on the way to MSNBC, and for like 2 weeks, he was pretty much the only broadcast or cable news voice that was actually talking about the Occupy movement. And I've seen that increasingly. The news ain't what it used to be. So that's one thing we can talk about. Mainstream media, right-wing media, alternative media. 713-526-5738. Another topic that I think is kind of interesting is something I'm calling, is trans the new gay? You know, there was a time when old movies would basically include characters that they implied were gay, and one actor that did a lot of those roles was Edward Everett Horton. They would have the wussy man or the masculine girl, and they would never use the word homosexual or queer or lesbian. But they would kind of allow you to draw your own conclusions strictly by behavioral stereotypes. And then, I think, starting a lot with Ellen DeGeneres, it became more of a thing that was out there. You had a gay character with a gay show titled after her. And I think that broke a lot of ground. And now you've gotten to the point where I would say in the demographic from like, 14 to 35, the shows that are aimed at that demographic, there is almost always a gay character, minor or major, a gay story arc, a gay love affair. You can argue whether or not that reflects reality, or they've now gotten so enamored of having gay characters that they are even overrepresented in the media. But what's interesting is now all of a sudden you've got transgender, transsexual starting to turn that corner where it's gone from something that's kind of in the background to something that's really in the forefront. And I think Caitlyn Jenner probably marks that turning point. I was reading an article earlier this evening where the point was made that up until Caitlyn Jenner, for the most part, I don't think writers really knew, and this writer didn't think that writers really knew what to do with transgender characters, and made the point typically they're either hookers or mass murderers. Now all of a sudden you've got a bunch of shows coming out with transgender characters. Some of them are reality shows, some of them are fiction shows, some of them the transgender character is actually the front, upfront and personal character, the lead. And it's almost like they've latched on to transgender as this new hot thing that they want to put into their stories. Trans, you know, sexual orientation is a very tricky thing. You've got homosexual, you've got lesbian, You've got transvestite. You've got transgender. There may be other variations of which I, as a sort of naive straight guy. Yeah, naive straight guy.
But before you go, I had to interrupt you just to, you know, I'm here to protect you.
Yes, you are.
I'm here to protect you. So Mike did a great thing today, people. So anybody listening to Mike talking about this gender issue, the show before Mike's show is the Queer Show. And he actually had some good words with those folks. So if anybody here makes a little faux pas, remember most of it was cleared.
I actually ran this idea past someone from the Queer Show, and he thought that it was a spot-on topic. So anything I say that someone may interpret as a faux pas, it is well-intended, if occasionally naive and stupid. Okay, we have open lines, 713-526-5738. And we have, by the way, Egberto, did we give away both tickets already? Two pairs.
It's one pair.
One pair.
One pair. And actually, he would have wanted more, but I figured you wanted to wait before somebody. So what I did is I got his number.
Okay.
Okay, so you can take care of that after
so
the show.
So we have a person who would love to have two pairs.
Right, but we...
But because we're really trying to spread it around, if there's anyone out there who wants a pair of tickets to Space City Comic-Con, we have a pair available that at the end of the show, if nobody asks for it, we're going to give two pairs to this person who requested them.
Right, exactly.
Because we have two pairs to give away, and they're going to be given away.
Yes, Mike.
Okay, 713-526-5738. Let me do my station ID a little early here. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, a Pacifica station, community supported. Please go to the website kpft.org and click on the tip jar and give them some money and tell them it's from this show that you were inspired. Jerry, you are on the air. How are you doing tonight, Jerry?
All right.
What's going on?
Oh, not much anything. You sat there and said you're talking about the general bomb out of the mainstream media.
That wasn't the term I used, but I think I understand your drift. Basically,
well,
their failure.
Not exactly the same phrase, but...
Basically, their failure to properly inform, I think, is what we're both agreeing on.
Yeah, I think that there is something to that, but you have to actually look at the broader media environment that they're in. And everything, you know, right now, regular standard television is actually fighting for, you know, eyeballs and stuff like that, mm-hmm. like it never has before, basically.
Right.
And the problem with the media in the United States is that basically most of it is profit-driven, and even the stuff that isn't profit-driven, like KPFT and Pacifica, money still counts for a heck of a lot. You can't get by without significant amounts of money.
Well, you have like PRI and other public media where there is a certain amount of government support, and increasingly they have been forced to kind of play nice with the government funding. Whereas something like Pacifica, KPFT, which doesn't get much if any government funding, we can speak more freely. We don't have to worry so much about consequences, except to the extent, you know, that folks like you don't send us money.
Yeah. But the problem with that is, you know, this is one of the things that sort of like, you know, people don't really think about the broader media environment and also what's happened to people's attention spans and what else has happened to the media. I'll give you just one example of that, and that is they did that Song Pacifica thing there at KPFT. They were too late with that.
I'm sorry, you broke up. Say that again, please.
Way too late.
Okay.
And I don't know why it keeps breaking up. I'm hearing something on my phone, actually. But the Pacifica, you know, Pacifica put on that Song Pacifica thing. And if they had done that 5 years sooner, earlier, I would have sat there and said, that's brilliant, you know, even if I didn't really care for it, but I would have actually sat there and said, you know, that was verging on visionary. But basically what happened was is there was already so much commercial Hispanic media in town by then and in the area that, you know, basically that was a Me Too or, you know, an Us Too, an afterthought, basically.
I can actually tell you that the origin of that was the Pacifica board in California, where apparently KPFA or something like that, the Los Angeles station.
Oh, okay.
And apparently they've had some success with generating more Spanish language or Hispanic-oriented programming, and they've now kind of said to the rest of the network, we would like you to do that. And since we are not syndicated, we are a part of the Pacifica network, so we kind of have to follow their lead.
Yeah. Well, it's understandable, but the thing about it is that basically they had that on every night. You know, there was like four nights a week where they had that show or whatever. They just do it like once a week now. But you know, basically there wasn't a broader consideration as to whether or not there would be actually the numbers to support a show like that, and also the money would come in or not.
I think you've actually got someone trying to call you is probably why you're breaking up. So if it's okay, Jerry, unless you wanted to say something to kind of wrap up your thought, I'm going to go on to the next caller.
Yeah, actually, I do.
Okay.
Anybody's calling me, but anyway, there's something going on, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, what I wanted to say was in regard to my remarks last week, I wanted to say a couple of things. I talked to you after the show, of course, and everything. I gave you the wrong book. I told mention the right author, but I gave you the wrong book as far as that reference went. It's The Cash Nexus by Niall Ferguson.
Okay.
And then actually, if you go look in Wikipedia, I finally remembered that night, later that night, I remembered what one of the things is, the names of one of those things, consoles. If you go look under SONSOLS, under consoles, that's basically the first consoles were issued by the British government in 1751. They're going to supposedly cash them in this year and everything. So there may be some that have been floating around that have been paying for like 260 years or more.
Well, I know there are still some Tsarist Russia bonds around and some other stuff. I'm going to let you go, Jerry. I appreciate your call. Interesting as always. And have a good night. I'll speak to you probably next week. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we have open lines. We may be having some board problems, so if you can't get through, please call back.
Yeah, there's some of the lines started to mix together. I think that's why the other caller started to get those clicks, but it seems like we have Josh in ready for you, Mike.
Okay, so 713-526-5738. If you don't get through, please keep trying. Josh, thank you for your patience here on the air. How are you doing tonight?
All right, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thank you.
So, topic of media, I mean, you know, I'm a student of academia of sorts, and we believe in the documentation of sources and all that jazz, right? Well, in all honesty, the most alarming trend in popular journalism, I would say, is really no one really has a viable barometer for what is true or not anymore.
Well,
you know,
they used to be much stricter in many cases about confirming sources. Generally, you wanted to hear the same story from three different sources. And what you hear a lot now, because all these news media feel the need to scoop each other. So very often what you'll get is, we have an unconfirmed source. We have been told that. We have heard that. And sometimes they'll go out of their way to emphasize, we have not confirmed it. But arguably, if they haven't confirmed it, they shouldn't be reporting it.
And that's true. And, you know, I am of the younger generation, I suppose, and I have a Facebook where I read lots of very idiotic Facebook articles very often. And people really believe them without really contesting what they're saying, no matter really how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, we have a very credulous public, and I think it has to do with the kind of education they've been getting over the last couple of decades. Media has a lot of responsibility. You know, you have shows like Searching for Bigfoot. Well, you know, they've been searching for Bigfoot for 3 years, and surprise, there is no Bigfoot. But, and the ghost hunters, there are no ghosts. So they say, I feel a vibration in here. It feels very creepy. You've internalized it, buddy. It's all about you.
I guess it doesn't really sell very many advertisements, so.
Well, Well, but they're running the show for years, so they must feel they're getting something out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Saying there is no UFO, ghost hunter, or whatever doesn't really, you know, put asses in the seats, so to speak.
Well, now, here's something that I think is commonly misunderstood. When someone talks about a UFO, that is an unidentified flying object.
Sure.
Any aircraft that comes into radar sensing which doesn't have any kind of an ID transmitting, until it's identified, it is an unidentified flying object. That doesn't automatically mean it's extraterrestrial. It just means we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's unidentified, and it's flying, and it's an object. That's all we know. So the fact that that has now turned into shorthand for an extraterrestrial vehicle and the sloppy use of the term by the media, I think, has contributed to people not understanding. It's like calling someone an alien. You know, they used to talk about aliens as simply anybody from outside. The original term to mean extraterrestrials, they were very specific about extraterrestrial aliens. And that got shortened to simply aliens. So you had someone like Jesse Jackson who objected to the term illegal alien on the basis it made it sound like these people are coming from other planets, where he was just showing his ignorance. An alien is just an outsider. It's a word that's been misappropriated.
And that's true, and that seems to happen a lot nowadays. You know, I was listening earlier when you were saying about the growing bias in mainstream media, and I mean, honestly, it's to the point where I really don't even watch television media whatsoever. I used to watch Colbert back in the day, and
News from Comedians. Yeah, News from Comedians. Those are the sources we need.
Yeah, right. I mean, honestly, I've been really into Vice Media. I mean, I'm not really sure if you've checked that out recently.
I have, and they've actually gotten really interesting. You know, I do so much reading online that I almost sometimes can't remember if I got something off TV or radio or simply read it online. But really, I think the majority of what I consume, with the exception of Alex Wagner, who I try to watch because she's interesting and actually has stories that they don't do on Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
And she's cute. Yeah, Egberto is mouthing to me. And she's cute. She is.
Doesn't
hurt. But smart. Very smart. And Rachel Maddow, who tends to do her show on maybe three or four topics, but in depth, and she's a great explainer. And Lawrence O'Donnell, who really, his show is about passion for certain things. He does certain topics, and he's passionate about them. But those three shows by themselves are not enough news. They're interesting, and they have useful information and perspectives, but they're not enough news, and that's why I tend to read aggregators and certain sites that I just visit. It's just because I want to get diversity of information and opinion and then make my own conclusions.
I'm very much the same way. I try to read from like you were saying earlier, I try to get from a couple different sources to kind of understand the true story, quote-unquote.
I think news aggregators like Google and perhaps Yahoo, but Google is my main source. I think news aggregators have an important function now because their programs, there's a certain word for it that escapes me at the moment, but the programming they've put in, they look for keywords and the numbers of hits, and they pull things from a lot of sources that sometimes I would never think to look at. The Hindu Times, okay? Haaretz. I mean, these are sources that, just, you know, they have greater or lesser degrees of reliability, greater or lesser degrees of professionalism or bias, but I would never even think to go to them if it wasn't for a news aggregator. But here's an opinion I have, and you can tell me what you think. You know that they talk about the traditional media dying for lack of funding. I think that the news aggregators should pay per click on various news stories. I think some of that money should go to the generators of the news stories, because the aggregators only do that stuff to gain eyeballs for their own advertising.
Yeah, so they're sort of using their service for free at that point.
Exactly. So if you can't run music without paying a royalty or paying a fee to, like, what is it, BMI or companies like that for just sort of broad broadcast rights, I think that news sources should have a similar organization, that if you're going to be a news aggregator and if you're going to use aggregated news in order to sell your own advertising, you should have to pay them a royalty. It would be only fair. And I think it would do a lot to save the necessity of good reporting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a good way for news to make money again, for sure.
Yeah, because they're doing the work, and they're not being paid. And that is not the American way. It's not even the Republican way. So I think we should all be on the same page with that. Okay.
Yeah, it seems like with the advent of the internet, it's kind of like, what's the new way we can make money, because we kind of lost the old sort of functioning. When everything's instantaneous, it's very sort of very tempting just to make everything sort of free, because the cost of creating it is much less.
Well, a lot of this stuff started during the Reagan administration, a little of it during the Carter administration under Republican pressure. But under the Reagan administration, for example, networks, as the price of their airtime, part of the price of their airtime, they were required to do public service time. And a lot of that time they dedicated to news. And when the regulation for that was eliminated, news became part of the entertainment division. I mean, there's a news division, but essentially it's looked at as a revenue generator. And that changed news fundamentally as we know it.
So is news being part of entertainment? Is that why you go to Fox News and there's like, let's go to this Facebook Live Twitter feed and see what people who don't know what they're talking about anything, how they think about current affairs?
Fox is kind of the apex of news as entertainment and revenue generating. Josh, I appreciate your call. I'm going to let you go.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Call back again next week or any other time.
For sure.
We have open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my compatriot Egberto Willis on engineering. And we are 90.1 FM in Houston. Greg, you're on
the air. Mike. Enjoy the show as always.
Thank you.
So it's a topic that you brought up with the media that piqued my interest in two ways.
Okay.
I'm 56 years old, and I know that when you said the media isn't the same as it used to be, one of the things I miss, especially in radio news that you don't get to hear a whole lot of, is commentary about events of the day. Up until maybe about 4 or 5 years ago in this market, you'd have, like, different people doing the commentary nationally.
They used to
network
have
radio.
They used to have management editorials, and then they would invite response from responsible people in the community to respond to those editorials. That was part of the regulation that required them to be community-oriented in order to have their bandwidth. And they just... I don't remember the last time I saw a station editorial and a response. I just don't remember. It's been decades.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other reason that almost everybody we brought up the internet and some of the new media, part of it, I think, too, is the public's attention span is shorter. So you almost have to do this kind of rat-a-tat, rapid-fire reporting that you kind of get it in, squeeze it all in at one time. Or what you'll put there is the sound bite. Like how many people in the last day and a half have brought up the sound bite of Donald Trump about John McCain on Saturday? And that's kind of how media has become sort of the place where you really don't go open the backstory of why something's happening. You kind of report it, have that be the driven story of the period of time we're talking about. And then after that dies down, and something else comes up, that becomes the new hot-button issue or hot-button story that we're all talking about.
You know, my brother-in-law is a news junkie, and we have commiserated many times about the fact that one particular story, no matter how newsworthy in and of itself, can totally hijack several news cycles. And it's like there are wars going on. There's political maneuvering going on. We have a presidency to think about and a Congress and what's going on in Europe. And all we're talking about is Caitlyn Jenner, or all we're talking about is some baby who's been kidnapped or some plane that crashed. And those stories in and of themselves have some newsworthiness, but they're not newsworthy enough to completely hijack the news cycle when there's a whole planet of stuff going on.
True. You remember, I think it was last year, remember when the plane disappeared?
Yes.
CNN spent like maybe a whole month talking about that particular airplane, what happened with it, and you know how the Malaysian airplane was, you know, how they needed it, find it, or
there was a lot. There was a lot about that story that was newsworthy and interesting and informative. I had no idea the extent to which the Indian Ocean is essentially a dead spot in terms of radar coverage, in terms of topographic knowledge. I had no idea. So it was newsworthy. It just wasn't newsworthy for 24/7.
Yep. I mean, and it's like now. I mean, how many stories in the last month and a half, maybe month and a half, have we heard about either Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side? And we've talked about polls and the horse race, and we haven't really delved into the issues that much.
And you made the point about attention span. Now, I believe that I probably have had a lifelong condition of attention deficit disorder. It's hard for me to focus. I have so many windows open on my computer hates me. But if you engage me, you know, one of the, I'm not going to call it a symptom, but one of the traits of somebody with ADD or even ADHD, hyperactivity disorder, is that in addition to being highly distractible, they can become obsessive about a particular thing and focus for hours on it. So while you have a valid point about the attention span, it's kind of become a truism in our society. I think in part it's because we're not engaging people to spend any more time listening to a story.
True. We don't. And we don't really explain a story in context anymore. Like, when we were kids, we always kind of knew the historic value of it because the media members at the time would say what this meant, tell you what the implications of the long-term effects were going to be.
The newsreaders were newsmen. The newsreaders were news people. They actually had been to, like, World War II and Korea and Vietnam, and they had reported. And then they came back and they became anchors. Whereas today what you have is a lot of lightweights.
Yep. And that's the thing I miss. I miss guys like a Cronkite Peter Jennings, or maybe even the late Bob Pierpoint, who was the CBS News longtime White House correspondent.
Huntley and Brinkley. They were a great team.
They were a great team. And I don't think young people appreciate what journalism can do. I mean, one of the best things that I got when I was maybe a young adult or even an older adult was like a 3-record set of Edward R. Murrow's I Can Hear It Now. And you could see the genesis of radio news and how it began and how it's evolved and what we expect of news in the 21st century and the technology that's there. I mean, I think a guy like Ed Murrow, if he were able to be reincarnated, he'd be amazed, but he would also be saying, yeah, what I said back in the 60s at the National Association of Broadcasters was true about how maybe it's too personality-driven and not really journalistically driven.
Well, to be fair, the media has always had this part of it that was about gossip and hearsay. I mean, you had reporters like Hedda Hopper, who really their whole career was reporting on TV and movie stars, initially movie stars. So that part has always been there. But, you know, I'm going to throw out an idea, and someone can tell me if they feel this is good, bad, or technically improbable. We have so much cable now, and almost everybody with cable has it coming through a DVR that can pause live TV. Here's a thought. What if you gave 1 or 2 or 3 minutes to a story, and then the station would put up some kind of a little button that would say, if you want to know more about this story, hit this button. The rest of the report will pause, and you can look at the story in depth and then come back to our report. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea.
I wonder if somebody would ever do it. Egberto is going, yes, yes.
Yeah, I think somebody would.
Somebody should.
And I think it would depend on the interest of the viewers, but I think there's so many stories that we don't put a context on anymore.
Egberto,
really,
you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment. You better write that down and patent that. You know, everybody patenting everything right now so that we have a new format that says you tell the news And then right after that, you have the button. Once you click the button, the news pauses and goes to the website that you can go ahead and read the rest of the news. When you come back, it continues from the... In other words, your 30-minute news show becomes a 30-minute index into several, several expanded editions of... That's a great idea.
And they do something like that now. Sometimes I'll be watching on my DVR and they'll say, if you want to add this program to your watch list, hit the button now. So the technology, I believe, is there. It's just someone has to do it. So Egberto, being the more business-savvy, energetic part of this partnership, we may talk about that off the air.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, Greg, I appreciate your calling. You've generated some good comments, and you've given me some ideas. So.
Thanks. I'm glad to do it.
Okay, I appreciate your calling. Take care. Have a great week. Okay, quick station ID, ThinkWing Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Gary. Oh, and by the way, we have open lines, 713-526-5738. Gary, and I'm going to, because Gary, I know you're something of an intellectual, I am going to add another topic here that you may or may not want to comment on, but it's something I really wanted to bring up. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. I have talked in previous shows about why, I'm curious why it is that the occupation of Germany and Japan and Italy after the Second World War went so smoothly and the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan went so badly. And of course, there are lots of potential reasons. One of the reasons that has occurred to me within the past week has to do with the fact that we never declare war anymore. And one of the advantages of declaring war is that when you defeat a country, generally there is then a declaration of surrender and peace. Because we don't declare war and we destroy the government that we invade, we never even have a lower-ranking person who can sign a treaty that says, okay, we now surrender because we've never declared war on them. And maybe that's why things have gotten so sloppy.
Okay, I have a response to that, but first I wanted to ask my question.
Sure.
Since you're speaking about the media, what do you think of the Huffington Post notice about Donald Trump?
I don't know that I have read that particular story. I think.
All right, well, what they've done is they've decided that any Donald Trump-related news or political information will now be on their entertainment site with Honey Bear Boo Boo and Kim Kardashian and will no longer appear on their political or news sites based on Donald Trump's most recent statements. Now, is that journalism? I mean, it's funny, it's hilarious, but what do you think of that? And I'll tell you the difference between Iraq and Japan and Germany. You're comparing apples to oranges. That was then, this is now. You cannot compare the sectarianism and the issues going on in Iraq and the Middle East to Japan and Germany, which were basically, I don't remember the word, but
they were states.
Well, they were genetically identical states. What's the word? Homogenous. Japs were Japs, and Chinese were Chinese, and Thais were Thais, and French were French, and Germans.
Okay, we're not going to run down the whole planet.
But now you can't. The people in England, when they sliced up the Middle East and Africa and Asia, you know, they didn't pay any attention to sectarian divides.
That's true.
And the various religions and the various cultures, the Kurds and the Christians and the Shiites and the Sunnis, they just sliced it up based on economic. That's why Kuwait, that's why Saddam Hussein, Kuwait was historically part of Iraq. And so he took over.
Well, historically,
that,
historically there wasn't an Iraq.
Well, that's exactly true, but there was. It was there.
It was a different country, different name, different borders.
Well, what, Sumeria? I mean, come on, these people have been there, and the British took them over, and they sliced it all up based on there was no sectarian. Same thing happened in Africa.
Yes.
They sliced up Kenya and Tanzania and South Africa. And, well, the Dutch were there, and then they didn't care about the Zulus or the Houthis or the Tutsis or, you know, I mean, it was historically divided. And then they said, well, we own it all, and now this port is here, and we need this road here and this bridge there. And that was why you can't compare Iraq and and the bad decision to invade Iraq.
Well, I'm going to separate that into two things. First of all,
but what do you think of the Huffington Post?
Okay, I'll get back to that. I haven't forgotten, and Egberto is going to want to put in his two cents.
Should I hang up and listen, or do I get to talk again? I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay, listen, and then I'll give you a chance to wrap up, and then I'll go on to Mark. I think I agree with you about the borders. I've talked about it a lot, about the borders in Africa, the borders in the Middle East, how arbitrary they are, and they depended very much on international politics and intrigues. No question about it. I think, though, that when you talk about war and peace, allowing for the fact that we're talking about a different age, different countries, non-homogeneous societies, I think that maybe there is something to be said for actually declaring war on a state and then the state responding, and then at the end somebody surrenders and there are actually terms of surrender and people are told, okay, now it's peace, lay down your arms, and they're told that by somebody in authority. I think that makes some difference. Now, as far as the Huffington Post, I think I also agree with you on that. I mean, whatever you think of Trump, whether you think he's a clown or an opportunist or a publicity hog, the fact is he's declared himself for president. I presume that he has or will actually file to run for president. He's going to have to get on ballots. But the fact is he's got support and he's serious about it, at least in his Trumpish sort of way. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that while some of what he does is entertainment, I think that they have to recognize him as a political force on the right. I think it's undeniable. Now, Egberto was waving his arms to say something.
Well,
so.
I mean, actually, I agree wholeheartedly with you. I wanted to get in there because I wanted to get that point out. The guy is a candidate for the presidential race. He has enrolled or, you know, qualified. That is news. The Huffington Post is actually doing the job, is attempting to do the job of the corporatocracy.
They're doing a disservice to their readers by trying to hide something.
What I wanted to say is we always thought about the Huffington Post as the liberal media as well, somehow, not the conservative media. What this is showing us is that the entire media, the media complex, they are all trying to fit us into a channel, because what happens is everybody knows that Donald Trump, if he continues doing what he's doing, is going to make the election a one-sided election. So they're trying to box Donald Trump in so that the election can be what the narrative is currently saying it's going to be.
Well, the Huffington,
the point is that you have news and you have your biased news, right? Fox, MSNBC, and they're liberal and they're conservative, but the Huffington Post is now made a decision on the value of a candidate. So
well, they are now corporate-owned.
And I know, but that's
and that monstrous. Makes the difference.
And as regards the Middle East, right, what was it that you said? That holy mackerel, I have a possum sitting on my table here looking at me while I'm talking. I think that the reason the things are not, things are very fluid now, okay? When World War,
there's going to be a lot of sorting out to do.
Well, when World War II occurred, you had Japan, you had Germany, you had all these states, and then after that, we had Israel established on another piece of property, and we had Iraq, and after the Ottoman Empire, we started slicing up this land and that land. So things are a lot more fluid now. It's not like it was in the early 20th century.
But I think declarations of war or the lack thereof are part of that change. And
I think that
there are consequences to the political fact of life now that there are not declarations of war. I think there are consequences. Gary, I'm going to have to let you go because we have to leave 5 minutes earlier today. So instead of
Declare war on a group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda? Hello.
That's problematic.
But
declaring war on Iraq or Syria was not problematic. They were entities. They had governments. We should have declared war if we're going to be attacking them, very simply, in my opinion. And Congress is responsible for that as much as anybody, if not more.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. I always appreciate your call. Quick ID, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. I've got my compatriot here, Egberto Willis. I have been derelict in not mentioning that he has his own show Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right. I really like to do that during every station ID, and I have forgotten. I am so sorry.
And I am so hurt. I drive from Kingwood here to take care of my brother, and my brother take care of me.
So I'm going to say it again. Egberto Willis does Politics Done Right every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. He's absolutely worth a listen, and I love when we can agree on stuff. And sometimes even when we don't agree on stuff, it's still enlightening. Okay, we have open lines. I try to get everybody on, but you'd have to be quick. 713-526-5738. Mark. By the way, Egberto, do we ever give away the second pair?
Yes, we did. I have two telephone numbers for you.
Great. Okay. Mark, you're on the air. Thank you so much for calling and for waiting. How you doing tonight?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
I don't think Donald Trump is a clown. I actually think he represents the core values of the Republican Party.
That they usually are afraid to actually say in so many
right.
words.
Right, and he's saying it in such a way that's over the top. Of course he's over the top because he's Donald Trump. But that's the true values of the Republican Party. The only thing I think they wouldn't agree with him on is he didn't want to cut Social Security. But everything else, they would agree with him, except he's just so far over the top with it. That's my opinion, and I'll let you go.
Okay, I appreciate that, Mark. Then we definitely have open lines and about 8 minutes to go, 713-526-5738. You'd be amazed how much you can say within 8 minutes. In media, 8 minutes, 1 minute can be eternity if you suddenly get a brain lock. It's happened. Egberto,
I don't remember hearing you get a brain lock in the last year or so, Mike, so I think
I've gotten much better, but in my earlier days on the air, occasionally I got a brain lock. But you know what? I got some great advice from my first executive producer when I was on 650 AM. The best advice I ever got, and I've spread it wherever I could. He said to me, if you say something on the air that you suddenly realize was stupid, or if you suddenly brain lock and there's like 30 seconds of dead air, or whatever it is you do that all of a sudden you're a little embarrassed about, ignore it.
Right.
On radio, statistically, your audience turns over about every 15 minutes.
Right. Oh, I didn't know it was that quickly.
About every 15 minutes, your audience turns over. And if you dwell on the mistake you made, all that's going to do is start to make other mistakes.
Right. Well, you know,
because you're just preoccupied and you're no longer thinking. So just let it go, because in 15 minutes, nobody's going to remember unless it was so stupid it goes viral.
But you know what is so funny also, and I think that's where I see all of us here actually at KPFT, is that conversational method of dealing with your listeners, or dealing with the people that you know are out there listening. If you're conversing, have you ever run out of words? We've sat down in the green room for hours and spoken before.
Isn't that weird?
And that's what I'm saying. So that is, whenever I'm on the radio, I feel like I'm having a conversation with folk. So I never really run out of words because it's a conversation.
As long as you're having a conversation. But like right now, it's just you and me talking, which is great, but nobody's called. We got 5 minutes, folks. 713-526-5738.
Be that lucky person.
Be that lucky person. Egberto, we can chat until we get somebody
sure.
in. You get to see what I bring in here. I mean, I bring in all kinds of stuff.
I wouldn't have told the audience that, but let me tell you, folks, Mike and I have two different ideologies when it comes to how to handle
so
radio.
So different styles.
I come with a blog of the week and nothing else. Mike comes with a studio filled with paperwork and analysis. I am sitting down there and I'm like, Mike, why do you have all of that? Well, in case I run out of material. And I'm like, Mike, you can never run out of material. We are both too old to run out of material.
Well, here's the thing. I have all kinds of stuff in my head. If you trigger a thought, I mean, my stepdaughter used to say that I can do 30 minutes on almost anything. But the show is an hour. And you see, that's how you run out. So it's not so much that I keep stuff here because I don't know things. I keep stuff here to jog my memory, like the declaration of war and then the surrender for peace. That was something I've actually been thinking about on and off all week, because at the end of every show, I start thinking about the show I'm going to do next
week.
And I had put it on my website, on my blog post as a topic. I had not put it on my notes. I had almost totally forgotten it until 20 minutes into the show, and I wrote down on the top, Declarations of War and Peace, and I wanted to get that topic out there. One of the things I'm really surprised and a little disappointed about, the topic is trans the new gay. I'm really amazed I didn't get any calls on that. I figured that alone would light up the board.
Well, you know, I think what
maybe
happened...
Maybe it did.
No, but we had a lot of calls when that happened, but the board kind of screwed up. But you have to remember that we followed the queer show, which probably most of the folks that were in
so they, you know, they were trans and gayed out?
They were probably trans and gayed out from that show. You know, Glenn, in case I said anything that I wasn't supposed to say, you can slap me later on. But anyhow,
Well meant.
Yes. So, I mean, I have a hunch that that's what happens. And also, that's not what both my show and your show is mostly tailored towards politics. Of course, you get into a whole lot of other stuff sometimes that makes me wonder, but, you know.
I'm an eclectic guy.
You're an eclectic kind of guy. Well, I'm eclectic with politics, but
We have, you know, if Venn diagrams. I learned about Venn diagrams from Rachel Maddow. And who's the guy who goes in front of her again? Hayes?
Yes.
The two of them get obsessed with Venn diagrams. I learned about Venn diagrams, and now I think about them all the time. You and I in a Venn diagram have a lot of overlap.
Right.
But then there's also a lot of stuff. I'd say it's about 50-50.
Mike, I want to bring up something. You know, you did my show for me on Wednesday.
Thursday.
Because I
you're going to come on the wrong
day.
I'm getting old.
Yeah, my show is on Thursdays, folks. Thursday
3 p.m.
at 3.
Thursday.
Yeah. Anyhow, I did the. I went to Netroots Nation, and there was an interesting disruption. I don't know if you heard about it. The Black Lives Matter disrupted both Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley, and it didn't go over very well. And it's interesting the reaction about progressives. So on my show on Thursday, I hope you don't mind if I do a 20-second plug.
Sure, go ahead.
We are going to be talking about that and how progressives actually reacted to the Black Lives Matter. So do you want to ask something about that?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Bernie
right.
Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders is really this powerful force that may very well turn the election for the Democrats just because he's motivating people who have been so disappointed and
right.
so depressed about politics. And it's like, hey, there's somebody who speaks for me.
Right.
You may agree with Bernie or not. You may agree with some of his positions or all of his positions or none. But you have to admit, he is a force. He has attracted people. He's been getting five-figure turnouts, 10, 12, 14,000 people. Trump pays for that many people.
Hey.
Okay? So whatever you think of Bernie, he's a force. Do we have a call coming in who wants a minute? Let's see if we can get that person on really quick. You don't even have to spend any time typing, as long as they're not going to insult me with vile language.
Right now, okay, because we need to get you in right now real quickly. You're on the air.
Okay. What is your name?
That is Coach Bill.
Coach Bill. Hi, Coach Bill. You've got like a minute.
Oh, that's okay. What I was going to say is I saw Bernie last night.
Great.
Or at least I saw a part of it. And he sort of, you know, the Black Lives Matter thing, he took that head on. I think he adjusted his speech, not having heard it before last night.
He's been getting critiqued a lot on that.
Hmm?
He's been getting critiqued a lot on what they feel is his blind spot to minorities. Egberto, I think you need to turn off your mic.
He brought that up. I mean, you know, he put that right out there last night and addressed that head on.
So how much time do we have, Egberto? 1 minute? Okay, I'll take 30 seconds to sign off. Give me a 30-second digest of what it was like at Bernie's thing last night.
Okay, Bernie last night was excellent. It was electric. And the young man...
Coach Bill is the caller.
And Coach Bill, let me tell you, you did a great job in analyzing what occurred.
Has he written or spoken something?
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. Coach Bill did a perfect... He perfectly analyzed it. After the Black Lives Matter did their stint, Bernie Sanders adjusted his stump.
Okay, so Coach Bill, now Egberto has left you like 5 seconds. Can you?
That's okay. Bernie was great last night. A lot of energy. The people that were there were very excited, very enthused. And it was great to be there. I mean, I'm not a real political animal, but that one was worth it.
I love Bernie, and a Hillary Bernie ticket now is something that starts to sound really, really interesting. Do I have to sign off now, Egberto?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Coach Bill. Yeah, we have a different schedule tonight. You've been listening, run some music. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my talkative compatriot, Egberto Willis. He's made it a lot of fun for me. I appreciate all of you listening. I appreciate all of you calling. You guys make the show. I'm just here to mediate. Take care. Have a great week. I'll look forward to speaking with you again on Monday at 9 p.m.
Greetings to all of you listening on the Pacifica Airways. This is your National Election Supervisor, Eljoy Williams, with some important information about the 2015 local station board election process. Your participation as a candidate, a voter, or by helping with outreach efforts is crucial to the success of your station. A lot of you have questions about this process, and here with a few questions is frequent listener Kim. Thanks for your help, Kim.
No problem, Joy. So what can you tell us about this election?
Sure. This is an election for the local station board. This station is part of Pacifica Radio, America's oldest independent media network and the only radio network with a democratically elected board. The local station board has a lot of power. The board members oversee programming, approve the station's budget, and create policy to ensure that programs represent the needs of listeners and the communities served by the station.
Wow, that is a lot of responsibility. As a listener, can I be involved in this process? How?
Sure, you can. You can participate in the process in a number of ways. First, by being a member of your local station, by running as a candidate, or helping to spread the word about the election.
Well, I listen to Pacifica every day. Does that make me a member?
Being a regular listener is great, but to really support the station and participate in the election process, you must become a member by making a minimum annual donation of $25 or perform 3 hours of volunteer work at the station before midnight, Tuesday, July 14th.
So my next question is, let's say I want to do more than vote. I want to actually become a candidate. What are the requirements to run as a candidate?
Well, just like a voter, you will also need to be a current member of the station, and you also need to complete the candidate nomination package. You can find that on the website at elections.pacifica.org. You can also get a hard copy from your local election supervisor.
What's in the nomination packet? What materials do I have to submit, and when is it due?
That's a lot of questions in one, but I can answer them. You have to submit a written candidate statement, 15 petition signatures from other members of the station, and sign the fair campaign pledge that you will follow the rules of the election process.
Wait, 15 signatures from members? I have about 100 Facebook friends, but I don't know if they're all members of the station. How can I get support from 15 other members?
Well, you can ask your Facebook friends if they're members of the station for one, but your local election supervisor will also host a signing party at the station so other members can support you and sign your petition.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to get my candidate statement together right away. I can submit that online too, right?
You sure can. You can find all of the information you need about the election on the website at elections.pacifica.org. And when you submit your statement, it will be posted right on the website.
Okay, so after I renew my membership by donating at least $25 to the station, submit my materials to become a candidate, what happens next?
Well, providing that all of your submitted materials are in and your candidacy is verified, what's next is the campaign.
I've never been a candidate before or campaigned before. What do I do and where do I campaign?
It's okay. Your local election supervisor will help you through the process. The local election supervisor will host several on-air and in-person opportunities to make your opinions known to the voting public and to debate with other candidates during the election period.
This is so great that listeners like me get to participate in the process. Thanks for all this information, Joy. I'm going to get started getting my materials together right now.
That's so great, Kim. And to those of you listening, you can get involved in this process too. Remember, you must renew or become a member of your station by midnight on Tuesday, July 14th to vote in this election. And to be a candidate, you must be a member and submit the materials in the candidate nomination package. Please visit the elections website at elections.pacifica.org for up-to-date information, to see a list of candidates running at your station, and for contact.